born in February 16th in 1860. And he died in 1952. He lived for 92 years here on this earth. And he came to this country, and it's quoted even in here, and he worked as a young man, came across and worked in the silver mines in Colorado.
Agostino, your grandfather.
Agostino, my grandfather now, not my father. And he would go back and forth. He made a lot of trips from here and had brought money back so they could bring his family and his sons. And he lost, my father never knew his mother. She died in childbirth. But it was his daughter, Mary, came as the youngest, and Valentine. I might as well name the family. Let's start with Agostino had with his wife, whose name was Catherine, and he married a girl, Madeline, and there was a family that had six boys and one daughter. And Grandpa, we call him Potty, would as it reverently said, looking for work, and found a piece of ground with one of the Romans. It's quoted in here. And he went and got a quarry, building stone. What's it consist? Building stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then one by one they came over. My dad, when he came, I'll focus on Pietro. This is my father, Pietro P. Palaz Marcolina. As a young man of 14 years of age, and he was born in 1894 and died in 1981 at the age of 87. And he started with the trades, stonework. Felix was a builder, and he liked him and put him under his wing. And before long, all the brothers said, "Why are we working for these contractors? We'll be independent." And they would subcontract work for builders, but also do huge jobs in landscaping. They were quite the artisans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show you the works that they've done and the works over the years. And as time grew on, let me name the brothers. I think it's important if we're going to do it historically here. And just a minute here. We're going to start with Anthony. Tony was the oldest. And then there was Andrew, who I never met. I think he drowned in the river somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. You remember that?
No.
No.
I never knew that.
And then there was Pietro, and then there was Basil, Louis, and Valentine. And they had a sister, Aunt Mary. When they first came, there was an aunt they lived with, and then finally they built their own buildings on Mermaid Lane, on 133 East Mermaid Lane. They built three beautiful chestnut hill stone homes, which two of them were divided in half, so they were really 2, 4, 5 homes there. And then they built the offices with garages underneath with apartments above. They were quite industrious. After work, and Saturdays and Sundays, they would work hard. And the interesting part is, in one of the garages is where they invented they rented it out to a guy with the RCA, and they invented the television tube, the first tube.
Mm-hmm.
For the that's it. You see, she's a star.
Yeah.
and in progress, they were really formed and worked doing a lot of jobs, but they split off into two categories. They all were in one little office. It was no bigger than this room, because I used to estimate there when I was in sixth grade for them. You had Basil and Louis went into marble, tile, and terrazzo. And you had Andy died, but then you had Tony and Louis and Pietro. They went into the stone mason, but they all were in one office. And Aunt Elizabeth Donofrio, she was the secretary. Well, it was murder to get anything done there. But we had a good time. And they had not much formal education because I was in sixth grade. And at night, I'd go back with my dad. And the way they had the blueprints, you know, the plan view and then the vertical view of the home or the hospital or church they were going to build. And they would go by looking at a picture. No quantities, really, poor guys. I said, well, now, wait a minute. They'd say how many days to do a 10x10 square foot of stonework, which was fine, because they knew, because they worked in the field. They all came up the hard way with laboring and then becoming mechanics. So they knew what it would take a crew of three to do a 100 square feet of stonework. But to get the quantity exact, they're looking at the vertical plan views of this job. They were missing the corners because the reveals don't show those offsets. So Antonio, Tony, was president then. Oh, he liked me. And he had two boys, Phil and Bob Marcolina. They, and my first cousins, they were working there as stonemasons in the firm. But they weren't interested in the technical or the engineering part of it. So I took over the years. But I learned a lot from those guys, my uncles and my dad, going in the field. And when I during the summers, I'd work outside. I could see. I was water boy. they'd ask you to do this and do that. But it was interesting to see. And I've always loved it. And the order of the company, that was getting back to the year 1918 is when they really incorporated and got together as a firm. But they had been a private enterprise, just splitting up the way they did. They kept different books, a marble and tile. And Basil brought in Emerson Hollis, which was good. Basil wanted me to come to work for him. I said, no, I can't traitor my father. But he got a good estimator from DuPont. And so that made a good team. And we built them a place on Winston Road, which was quite nice. And they were quite successful. And Mark Lena Brothers were working for the noted architects in the area. And their reputation of quality superseded them. Well, they were very successful, and as far as organizational, they had their good times and bad times, but they always shook hands, all the brothers, and got along pretty good. Unfortunately, Robert and Phil had a misunderstanding with their father, and their father, Tony, was tough. He says, you're out. So they formed their own company. And that was F&R Marcolina, who was a little competition, I guess, against Dad, which I could never quite understand. But in any event, Antonio Agostino, excuse me, I got this correct, by grandfather, they got into the quarry business, and they really made him the big boss, whether he was or wasn't. He was president, I'd say, for a good many years. And then you had Tony as president and voted in from 1918 to 1938. Then Pietro Marcolina from 1938 to 1962. And then from 1962 to 2000, I was president and ran the show. But I took a different I didn't like working for builders, so I really went out independently as a contractor, general contractor, and enjoyed working directly for the landscape architects and architects and directly for the homeowner. And I always said, you go and hike to make a good living, you go where the money is. So I went to where the blue book, the carriage trade, meaning the very wealthy, resided and started. And we just did fine. It was a successful business. And after all those years since I started in 1952 with them to 2000, that's a long time. And I said, I had three sons of my own who were very, very wonderful young men, but none of them wanted to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get their hands dirty. So I gave them a good education, which they're all professional men today. So I had no one to leave the business to, and none of my men wanted it. And Mark Lorenzen, that's Lorenzen Brothers, who were competitors of ours, he said he'd buy it, which he did. And he bought also, a few years later, the quarry. So it really turned hands. And they were related, where Louis Marcolina, my uncle, was married to Elsie Marcolina. And so it was all family. We were all good friends. But over the years, I think what kept the groups together, the Northern Italians were very proud people and real great artisan and hardworking.
Well, you tell me about your work, the work of your father and your grandfather. But do you remember something about the everyday life?
Oh, indeed. Yeah, their everyday life with an average or normal day, say on a Monday till Friday, 5 days, sometimes Saturday they were up and in the office at 5:30. And they would work out in the field, that's on construction jobs, till 4:30, it was quitting time. And I want to interject one thing here. They, from the very inception of the trowel trades, they were unionized. It's hard to believe. I couldn't quite comprehend it. And the thought was, and I did a little research, what I could gather, the Scotch were involved in the trowel trades, and they are the people who formed the guild. And then it caught on, and we were Local 3 stonemason contractors of Philadelphia. So they had certain rules and restrictions, but they took time for a coffee break, maybe at 10 o'clock till 10:15, then back on the scaffold right away, and then work till noon, and noon to 12:30, you ate your lunch. You had a bottle of wine, a big Italian roll with cheese, and a lot of them had, the northern guys all had polenta with chicken and tortue and, you know, all the good goodies. And then you think the day's over, and now they go to what we call the Venetian Club, which is a very important part of their social life.
Yeah.
It was formed in 1924. There's a booklet here you can read, or I'll lend you. And this young lady wrote an article in 1954 that's in here, Helen Henry Marcolina. They'd go for a couple drinks to talk. And then there were the Northern Italians, though, stayed close to one another. They'd change, if you need a couple stonemasons, big job, and you didn't have them, you'd lend them to the next guy. They were really good people that way. They stayed together. Then they'd go home and eat, and I'd have to wait. We had sat at a table, set every night in the dining room, like here. All right, they left the office at 4:30. They went to the Venetian Club. Maybe 6:30? You never knew. But nobody ate in the family. No one. You waited till the boss came home at 5. And even though you were tired many nights, I had to get down. I couldn't keep up. Then, believe it or not, they're off again. They get together. They go to the station, where the train station, the commercial spur there, where the freight train would come in with a crane carload of hot cement. Cement, when it's first made, generates a lot of heat. And on summer nights, I went over with them a few times. I didn't last too good, I'll tell you the truth. Those bags were 90 pounds in those days, and you'd be soaking wet. Here, you work till almost 11 o'clock on given nights, not every night. But every other night, you're back in that office 8 o'clock in the evening. At night, they're back. Here are the blueprints. They didn't have time during the day to sit down and have estimators. They had to figure jobs, you know what I mean, estimating, and give the people a price so they could carry on and get more work. And that was a fun time, because neither of them agreed exactly. And boy, when you get brother on brother, I'm crying over it, because if my holes... The walls in my office could have talked. You'd heard stories you couldn't believe, and words you never heard of. How beautiful. My secretary in the house, she stood. She'd come back then and help out. God bless her. In any event, they were quite successful, and even during the Depression time, they worked, did a lot of work for the Woodwards. Of Chestnut Hill and the very wealthy people, and they created work. And particularly, the biggest job, and I still say it's probably the biggest job in Chestnut Hill ever, in Chestnut Hill. Stone was the Tyson Estate. It was on the end of Chestnut Hill Avenue, West Chestnut, all the way down to Wanda Street. And they gave the company the job. They had 40 men involved, our company. And they gave it to my Uncle Tony and my dad. They really liked my dad a whole lot, Mr. Tyson. And they built a huge home. It's a mansion. It's gorgeous. Butchers finally ended up owning it later. But then when that was completed, times still weren't good. So Mr. Tyson said, I want a 10-foot wall around my entire estate, which is a city block. Can you imagine that? Out of Wissahickon's stone, Chestnut stone. All that stone came from our quarries. And that's part of it, too. When they were slow, they'd quarry. To get stone, they'd get an inventory of stone, so they'd be ready to take on to jobs. It wasn't always needed. Some of the homes in Chestnut Hill, when they quarried, my pick and shovel with horses, and they were behind them were these sharp blades like tilling soil, picking up the stone. You'd hit stone. Many times the stone you got from the cellar, you had enough to build a house with in Chestnut Hill. It's in some areas right on the surface. A lot of times it isn't. The Woodward home that I built, this is later in years, on Telner Street, George's place, it's all from his basement. Now, I bid the job, and I now have the stone coming from the quarry, so I thought I didn't feel right, so I told Mr. Woodward, well, we'll deduct the stone. I'll give you credit. I won't charge you for that. He said, let's see how the job goes. Well, you know, to this day, you're so happy with the skill and the craftsmanship of my men, he wanted to pay me more money. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, but they were hardworking guys and industrious. And you put where we had some fun later in life, they're all prima donnas. And it's safe to say, but if you didn't do what the superintendent said, you were fired real quickly. So they kept a sharp, heavy handle on the workers, because otherwise it'd been. But I had more fun doing something else. When I had a job, and I knew they all didn't get along together, I put that group or that crew on one end of the job, and the other crew on this end of the job. And I said, you guys meet in the middle, and the guys that meet in the middle, you're all going to get a bonus. Well, you ought to see the stones fly and the workmanship. And it was still quality. But I must confess, the guys from the northern Italy, they always won. They were really industrious men. They really were great. Yeah, and they were good to their families, but the Venetian Club, that's where we started. I don't know how we got sidetracked. Was a place for them to rest and play cards and have a lot of fun. And it grew. They put them in bowling alleys and they had dances, and it was a social thing for them. It was an outlet, and it's still there. So they're time tested, and they still brag about how wonderful they did the workmanship. Well, they did some beautiful terrazzo work on that, and tile work, mm-hmm. not our firm. Mm-hmm. Rosa was, mm-hmm. yeah. But then they had the bocce club, you know, and it's sports, which not all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, you know. He doesn't enjoy life to its fullest. They used to have dances and special occasions. On hunting time, you know, they'd have the turkeys, but they had the pheasants, mm-hmm. they had quail, they had doves, they had deer meat, and anything you want. Oh, in Halloween, the costumes they'd set up. Mm-hmm. So it was a good relief for everybody. But they were good men. And the younger brother, that Valentine, he got an education. He came over last. Well, he, during the war, was Aunt Mary, my dad's sister, and they were prisoners of war there for a while in the First World War. And when they came over, Valentine went to John Story Jenks, and he got a somewhat of an education. And matter of fact, he was there, and in his class, which I've often laughed about social things, with a guy called Frederick W.G. Peck. They used to throw stones at one another in the schoolyard. Well, here this guy became one of the finest landscape contracting men in the, I'd say, in Pennsylvania. And I ended up doing all his work, and he'd reminisce it. He said, that's your uncle. I said, no, I don't want to hear about it. But it was a lot of fun. What else you want to know, dear? There's a lot more in here I can talk about. I got teary-eyed and get so emotional about things.
Thank you.